Go ahead and talk.
Okay.
Just a couple of tests.
We like to have you about 12 inches away from the mic. Yeah.
About like that?
Like that. That's
okay.
Perfect.
Good. That's good.
Very good.
That's good. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, how was...
Today is September 18th, 2007. We are at Brightsville, Florida, the community center. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Program in partnership with the Library of Congress. We're interviewing Quentin Ken Clay. He was born on December 12, 1930 in Chicago, Illinois. My name is Gerhard Tam, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Also attending is Don Hill, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Well, Ken, you don't mind if I call you Ken?
Ken, be fine. That's great.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit about what you did before you entered the service and how you got into the service, and then just keep telling us, talk about your service career. Go ahead.
Okay. To begin with, I graduated from high school in 1950, and I spent the summer working in various places and really couldn't...
In Chicago?
No. This is in southern Indiana, New Albany, Indiana.
Oh.
And I had moved around quite a bit before we had moved to southern Indiana. My dad was with the Railway Mail Service, and he had several jobs. He didn't have a lot of seniority, so he moved around quite a bit. And we had lived in several different states, like Kentucky and Virginia and Illinois. But anyway, at the time I had gotten through high school, I went to work at various places that I didn't particularly like. And the same year I graduated, I joined the U.S. Air Force and left New Albany, Indiana in October of 1950. Went through basic training. I first went to Lackland Air Force Base for processing, and from there I went to Wichita Falls, Texas for the actual basic training, and which was not very eventful. After basic training, I moved to Biloxi, Mississippi for the training school. It was a radio operator school. So I think probably 10 months of school, radio operator school at Biloxi.
What did you learn at the radio operator school?
It was different learning weather reports and learning about the weather and radio operating procedures and learning the Morse code and various things that would be necessary in that particular job description. And when we graduated, part of the class went to regular ground radio stations, and I was selected as an airborne radio operator. And from there, I went to Japan, Brady Air Force Base in southern Kyushu, Japan. And there I was assigned to a flight crew, and we flew missions out of southern Japan into Korea. It was in the 516th Troop Carrier Wing.
What kind of aircraft did you fly?
The aircraft was a C-46, the old Curtiss Commando. It was a little bigger airplane than the old Goonie Bird, the C-47, but it hauled a little more cargo. And our job was supplying troops with all kind of mail, food, whatever, all bombs to North Korea for the bombing airplanes. And we we hauled deceased back from North Korea, hauled them to the location. I forget what the location was we hauled them to, but anyway, that was it was more of a trucking outfit I was in.
But what dates are we talking about now?
This was probably the latter part of 1951. That gave me my 10 months in school plus about 8 or 10 weeks of basic training, probably the latter part of 1951 and into 1952. And I only spent 10 months in that particular Korean theater because I had spent, I think it was about a month of temporary duty in North Korea. We had different projects that we had over there. We had different missions. We had flare drop missions. We would drop flares on convoys in North Korea and light them up so the...
So you flew over enemy lines?
Oh, yes, yes. We flew over enemy lines and... like I say, we flew the flare drops, we flew leaflet missions, free passes for the North Koreans to come to the South Korea. We flew up into Manchuria a few times to drop spies into the way up north into Manchuria, which was kind of a hairy situation. I didn't particularly like that, but it was... if it was a job, it had to be done, I guess.
Did you have any fighter escorts as you were going?
No. When we flew up and like that, we flew down between the mountains under the radar in those big old lumbering C-46s that low and slow and out of sight of the radar. But like I say, it was all down between mountain type flying, and it's kind of scary.
Did you ever get any ground fire?
Oh, we'd come back home sometime. We have a few bullet holes in the bottom of the airplane, but they always patched them up and sent us back again. But after 10 combat missions, they wouldn't let you stay over there anymore. They rotated you back home. I volunteered to stay because I was enjoying it. I was single and didn't particularly care, so I volunteered to stay with no avail. They sent me home anyway. I did receive the air medal from that 10 combat missions that I flew in. And after that, I was sent back home and sent to Memphis Municipal Airport. That was, I guess it was the National Guard side of the airport there. I think the commercial side was on one side and the Air Force was on the other side. And I spent a few months there, and at that time they had opened up the old Ardmore Air Force Base in Oklahoma. So I...
What was the name again?
Ardmore, A-R-D-M-O-R-E, Ardmore Air Force Base. And... of course, this was a C-119 outfit. When I left Japan, I moved back into the upgraded cargo-type aircraft into the C-119s, the flying boxcar. And from Ardmore, we had all kind of missions that we flew. We flew, I think, the 82nd Airborne. We flew to Alaska one summer for their winter maneuvers. I think prior to that, we flew one of the airborne units to Puerto Rico for their maneuvers. We did a lot of flights to Fort Benjamin Harrison for the parachute training that they were having.
Fort Benning.
Fort Benning, right. Fort
Georgia.
Benning. Sorry about that.
Fort Benning, Georgia.
Yeah, it's been a long time ago. That and Polk Air Force Base. We flew down there quite a few times to drop paratroopers and as for their training. And, I guess it was our training too, but that kind of sums up the tour in the Air Force.
Well, it looked like a pretty good career. I mean, can you elaborate a little bit more about your combat missions that you flew into the North Korea and Manchuria?
Most of those, I think there was only one of the ones when we flew up to Manchuria. They didn't have too many of those. That was kind of special missions.
How many people did you drop?
Usually it wasn't but two.
Oh.
And we had to fly up there till we saw some signal fires on the ground, and then we dropped them, and that was the end of it. Turn around and come back. Most of the missions we had up there was leaflets, different free passes to come back, and that and flare drops. We a lot of times at night we would drop flares on convoys, and then the fighters and bombers would come in and do their thing, and we lit it up for them, and then they would they'd come behind and make the mess. But that was just a pretty short period of time that we did that. I think it was about a month that I was temporary duty in North Korea for that. Not North Korea, but the northern part of South Korea.
Well, tell us how you got out of the Air Force, and what did the Air Force do for you regarding your future life?
Oh, I don't know. I enjoyed it the period of time I was in there, but like I say, after 4 years, I was getting a little tired of it and said I'd get out. And I got out of the Air Force, and I went to school for a while. I went to college for a little bit. Never did finish that either. Got into electronics. Of course, I had got a taste of the electronics and the radio operation, and I kind of liked electronics, so I went to the electronics school when I got out to become a electronic technician, and I did that for several years, and then I went to work for the railroad. After I got out, they had, in fact, I had gone to the railroad before, well, shortly after I got out of the Air Force, and they didn't have any openings at the time, and so I went to work with Philco Corporation. I was a field technician for Philco and tech rep. And I spent a year in Alaska after that teaching electronics and maintenance of their airborne radio equipment. So after I got back from Alaska, I went back to the railroad again to see if they had any openings, and sure enough, they did. And so I went to work with the railroad and stayed with them. I was stationed in Louisville, Kentucky, which is right across the river from my hometown there in New Albany, Indiana. And about 1980, they had a merger. Our Louisville National Railroad had a merger with the Seaboard Airline and the Atlantic Coast Line. They finally become one railroad, and I was transferred from Louisville to Jacksonville. That's how come I happened to be in the Jacksonville area. So I lived in Jacksonville for about 5 years until I found out about Nassau County and being out in the country. And so we built a house in Nassau County in about 1985, I guess it was. Of course, I've been in Nassau County since about 1985. So.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add about you probably have got a million things that you wanted to tell us about your Air Force career.
Oh, goodness, I don't know.
Did you have anybody to remember that officers or sergeants that impressed you, that guided you in your career? Or?
No, not really. When I first went in, I really enjoyed the military. I liked the military. In fact, before I went into the Air Force, I was 3 years in the Indiana National Guard. So I had already had 3 years of military training. In fact, before that, I spent, I think, 2 years in the Indiana State Guard, which, like I say, was more military than I enjoyed. As a kid, I probably wasn't 13 or 14 when I joined that. But anyway, when I did get into the Air Force, I really liked the military. And my cousin joined with me. I had a first cousin that we joined together. He didn't like it at all. In fact, going through basic, I thought he might go over the hill and give it up. But at the end of 4 years, I had kind of changed a little bit. I decided I wasn't going to have any more military. So I got out, and he continued on, and he stayed in the Air Force 20 years. And how you change over 4 years, that was something else. I really can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I think you told us a great story. Let me tell you that.
I did have one story that they cut us some orders when I was at, I think I was still at Memphis Municipal Airport. We had a set of orders to ferry three brand new C-119 flying boxcars to Germany. We were supposed to take them to Frankfurt, Germany. I guess that was Rhein-Main. Okay. We ferried those over. It took us about 2 months on a set of 2 week orders. That's typical military, I guess. But anyway, I think we flew to Dover, Delaware, where we picked up the new aircraft, and we was there, I guess 3 or 4 days before we could get out. They flew us in one navigator from California to fly with us, so we had to fly visual flight rules all the way because of only one navigator and three airplanes. So we had to be able to maintain visual contact between each other. So we flew to Newfoundland, one of the bases in Newfoundland, and we was there 2 or 3 days waiting for weather to, so we could leave. And I think we left there, flew out part of the way, and the weather got bad, and we had to go back to a different base in Newfoundland. There, a few more days, we had headed for the Azores, so that was one of the refueling stops. So when we finally got away from there, we got to the Azores and spent a night there. From there, we went on to Casablanca in North Africa, another fueling stop, and from there on to Rhein-Main in Germany. So we waited there, I think it was 8 days before we were supposed to fly three old wore-out C-82s, which was the forerunner to the C-119 flying boxcar. So we were supposed to ferry three of those back, and after 8 days, they couldn't get three together, three that would fly. So we ended up flying back on MATS, which is military air transport. And but after we got back, 2 months had been lapsed there. But it was good to be back. That was kind of living out of a suitcase for 2 months was kind of rough duty. That was the only real eventful trip I could remember taking, but we had a lot of them. And, there was always something going on. So
that's it, huh? Okay, Ken. Listen, in conclusion, thank you very much. We appreciate your service to the country. This concludes the interview of Quentin Clay of Priceville, Florida.
Right.